Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-800-259-5791. But please hold your calls until we ask for them, because we have with us, hopefully, on the line, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And Dr. Cuddy has actually testified before Congress. He's worked for the Department of Education during the Reagan administration. He's taught at the university level. But he's best known for being one of the finest researchers we have, and we carry a number of books that he's written. And we hope, of course, to be carrying another one very soon, and we'll tell you at the time break exactly what I'm talking about. But with that as the background, we're going to be talking about part four of this idea of their using of religion to bring about the New World Order. Dr. Cuddy, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Well, why don't you just pick up the story?
Well, what I thought I'd do is the new part of this series is part four. But since this is a new audience from last week, I don't think I mentioned last week, I thought I'd give a brief sort of run through of part three, since I haven't mentioned it to this particular audience, and then get into part four. Part three of this series, Religion and World Government, I begin by talking about mass psychology. On your show before, we've talked about Tavistock and John Rawlings Rees and his term psychologically controlled environment, and that's what they use. It's not just, you know, a Pavlovian dog single person type of conditioning, but entire populations can be manipulated. They've determined how they can do that. And one of the things that Rees himself said in an article in the journal Mental Health back in 1940 is that they have made a useful attack upon a number of professions, and the two easiest were the teaching profession and the church. He made a point of mentioning the church because that's important to these people. And in 1945, the Rockefeller Foundation actually funded the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, its beginning, specifically to see if they could put wartime psychology into civilian society. Well, that was the year that the UN was to begin, 45, and I've mentioned in previous parts of the series John Foster Dulles, and he had a hand in the UN Charter, and the Rockefellers, I've mentioned before, helped with a check to purchase the land there. And Dulles, of course, became Secretary of State under Eisenhower from 1953 to 59. And in that last year, 59, he had ill health and he died shortly thereafter. But in that year, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund produced a work, and I won't go into it except to say that in that work they talked about they would have to shape a new world order. And one of the four dimensions they mentioned was spiritual. That shows how this particular element, is, as you've often said, Dr. Stan, there's a spiritual element to all of this, is extremely important. And then, of course, David Rockefeller founded the Trilateral Commission. And when Senator Goldwater did his autobiography and was describing them, once again, he was talking about their attempt to seize control of the four centers of power, and one of them was ecclesiastical. Again, an emphasis on the religious element of all this. The next thing I mentioned was shortly before Rockefeller set up the Trilaterals, one of Cecil Rhodes's prime people was Arnold Toynbee, the historian. And Toynbee, way back in 1931, had talked about they were going to undermine national sovereignty. They'd be sneaky about it. But anyway, a few years, 1969, just before the Trilaterals formed, Toynbee did another book shortly before he died called Experiences. Now, this is an insider in the know about the secret society.
And you're going to have to hold that until we get back here at Genesis, so don't even think about changing the dial.
The idea ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Terrorism. Terrorism. Chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video sheltering in place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at murkywater.com.
If you're tired of spending a small fortune every time you fill up, now you can do something about it. Ethos FR, a product used all over the world, has reported savings of up to 19% on gas and even reduced emissions of up to 30%. Ethos FR is easy to use and works with any kind of fuel, including gasoline, diesel, and ethanol. Ethos FR works by reformulating the gas in your tank to burn more completely, resulting in a cleaner engine, better mileage, more power, and fewer emissions. So visit ctsafegas.com and start saving today. That's ctsafegas.com.
Are your Federal Reserve notes looking for a safe haven? Mine found it in precious metals. Not paper promises, but actual gold in my possession. It is liquid, it is private, it owes no one, it cannot go bankrupt, and it maintains its purchasing power. Find your answer at Midas Resources. That's 1-800-686-2237. The answer is at 1-800-686-2237.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cutting, and we're talking about this move towards world government, which is the common denominator behind everything going on today. There are those people, and they're usually very wealthy and very powerful people, and they work through the Council on Foreign Relations and the Club of Rome and the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and the Masons and the Skull and Bones and the Bohemian Grove and the Lucius Trust and the Order of the Garter and the Royal Institute of International Affairs ad nauseum. People of great wealth and great power, dedicated to the destruction of Christianity and the bringing about of a one-world government, because they realize the two go together. Christians believe their freedom comes from God. Of course, the internationalists want to bestow whatever freedom they feel you deserve, and believe me, it'll be very little when they're in total control. They want to become the new feudal masters of a world of serfs. And that's exactly what they're working for today. And in Europe, they're creating this tremendous bureaucracy that is going to control all of the countries of Europe. And even though the people over there don't want it, it doesn't matter because they have an agenda and they're going to carry it out. The leaders of Southeast Asia never agreed to form a union, an ASEAN union. The leaders, certainly in Africa, 25 black leaders have gotten together. They're working to establish a free trade zone in South America, which is a stepping stone to a world, to the government, a regional government. Hugo Chavez is working in South America to do the same thing. And President Bush and Vicente Fox and, of course, Paul Martin, Premier of Canada back in 2005, they've agreed to do the same thing right here in the United States. And then, of course, when they have everything in place, they'll unite all of these trade blocs into a one-world government. But the first thing you have to do is get people to give up their sovereignty, and that's what's going on. And going along with that is this using religion to get people in behind these various government programs. And, oh, won't it be wonderful when we have everybody being prosperous because we have poor trade? A free trade without understanding this is a stepping stone to the impoverishment of everybody in the world. So you pick up the story there, Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. The economic leveling process has been going on for some time, and a lot of people are pretty familiar with the New World Order and the politics and the world government and world economy and so on, but the point that we're talking about now is the use of religion to pursue this, because, as I said, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund back in the 50s said there's going to be this spiritual element. Senator Barry Goldwater recognized that, and we had gotten up to Arnold Toynbee, who's one of Cecil Rhodes' prime individuals in his secret society. And Toynbee's book just before he died is called Experiences, and in there he mentions two important things: that nationalism is going to be subordinated to world government, but he also says sectarianism is going to be subordinated to ecumenicalism. And he may have actually said, he should have said syncretism. He has a broad definition of ecumenicalism, a sort of world religious viewpoint. But anyway, that once again shows the emphasis that these brokers place on religion. And in previous parts of the series, I had mentioned the Baptist, Samuel Zane Batten, because his book was titled The New World Order way back in 1919. And what I want to emphasize is this isn't just some unique person. It's not like there's this one Baptist minister in some place who says this. Batten was a relatively high-ranking official. Also, I've mentioned Walter Rauschenbusch, who was a very prominent Baptist minister who was the father of the social gospel. Well, in this case, in this particular part three, I'm talking, among other things, about the Methodists. And I use the example of a book by a Methodist minister, George Blunt, who actually lived, he's deceased, in the city where I'm located. And he had authored a book called Peace Through World Government. And I'm in North Carolina, and that's sort of where the World Federalist Movement began, here out in the western part of the state. Five groups got together. But anyway, this book is something of a history of the World Federalist Movement, and is dedicated to a Rhodes Scholar named Robert Lee Humber, who's also here from North Carolina. And that's a fellow who had developed about 60 years ago something called the Declaration of the Federation of the World. He got about 20-some states to sign on to this thing for a world government. And so Blunt is saying how we need to cooperate with the World Federalist. First, the Methodist will, then, you know, we can get the Society of Friends, the Quakers, and then the World Christian Community will join in, and we'll have World Brotherhood and World Government and so on. And he says this is what we ought to spend all our efforts for. And then towards the end of the book, he refers to Lord Alfred Tennyson's Locksley Hall from 1842, which is referring to the Parliament of Man, the Federation of the World, and so on. And Blunt thinks this is very good. Now, Blunt also, again, this isn't just some unique individual who happens to be for world government. He refers to the Book of Discipline of the United Methodist Church in 1968. This is the whole church. And in there, he's quoting them saying, quote, "We believe that Christianity cannot be nationalistic. We believe that the UN is a working center of international cooperation which provides the most hopeful avenue leading to peace and world order." So this is a concern and a push of the Methodists as well, as a group at that time in the 60s, the use of the Methodist Church to achieve these aims. And Blunt wrote that book in the 1970s, and then in the next decade, beginning of the decade, Robert Mueller, who was an Assistant Secretary General of the UN for many, many years, authored the book called New Genesis, Shaping a Global Spirituality, saying the UN flag should be in all houses of worship. And then later on, the mid-90s, he authored another book saying we had to get rid of national sovereignty. That was a bad thing. And his books were, I mean, his he has actual schools around the world. One of the main ones is in Texas, and they use Alice Bailey's, the occultic Luciferian Alice Bailey's works as their cornerstone. And, of course, we've mentioned before how Alice Bailey had Lucifer Publishing, which became Lucis Trust. And in the late 90s, there was a festival, the Lucis Trust Festival Week of the new group of world servers in 98. And they've maintained the UN's meditation room for many years. Bailey had formed this new group of world servers in 1925. And if you think there's some kind of wacky, isolated fringe types, this new group of world servers includes Jimmy Carter's the Carter Center. It includes the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are members of that thing. You'll find something called the Character Education Partnership, which is a member, and if you look at their board, you'll see all kinds of CEOs of major corporations and other groups on that thing. And so this is a long-range plan. Bailey referred to it as the plan. It involved this new group of world servers. She said they were the hierarchy of liberated souls, or she also called them the transmitters of the purpose. Remember that word, the purpose. And what they were doing was, in her words, molding public opinion, quote, as a synthesizing factor within humanity to lay the foundations of right human relations and ultimate world unity.
But I think it's important that our listeners understand that this, the Lucis Trust and the new group of world servers really are occult organizations that really tie into this world Luciferian movement. And it's so difficult for people actually to believe that some people worship Lucifer. And maybe some of the people who belong to this new group of world servers, which is certainly one of the fronts for the Lucis Trust, don't understand its implications. But I'm sure some of them do as well. And that is so difficult for people to understand. Is there some people who believe there are two gods, everything is dualistic. There's the God that the Christians worship, and then there is the true God, and that is the Prince of this world. Because he gives us total freedom. There's no restraints put on us like there is with the Ten Commandments or God over saying, oh, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. We have total freedom if we give our allegiance to the Prince of this world, who says, do whatever you want to. That's the whole of the law. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, in case some of your listeners are starting to say, huh, Bill and Melinda Gates or Luciferians or something like that, you have to remember something. When the Antichrist comes, he's not going to have, you know, these little red horns and a red tail and, you know, wandering around on the earth like that.
No red tights at all?
No red tights. In fact, the Bible is very clear. He could come as a, quote, angel of light, somebody who's, you know, bringing light and wonderment and solutions to problems and things like that. And so it's not a case of the new group of world servers, or let's say the Character Education Partnership, going off, you know, at midnight in some secret dungeon and bowing down to a Molechian statue or something. It's more often what you just said, Dr. Stan. They have adopted and, I guess you say, worship the philosophy of do what thou wilt, do your own thing. You know, this is what Lucifer was basically doing. You can become as gods. And he went, and Lucifer, Satan, the serpent, and Eve in the garden, it went through a values clarification process where, you know, Lucifer and Satan is asking Eve, well, did God really say you die? Are you sure about that, Eve? Maybe you got this wrong. Let's do a little clarification of what he maybe really meant. And so anyway, it's a philosophy. It's sort of like Jesus. When people say, oh, I've accepted Jesus as Lord and Savior, when they say that, what I guess they often don't understand is they haven't just accepted a person, the Son of God 2,000 years ago, dying on the cross for their sins. That's not what Jesus is only. He is also, quote, the Word of God. He is the presenter of God's Word, the philosophy, the what you should do and what you should don't, what you should not do. And so when one says, I have accepted Jesus, they're not supposed to be just saying, I accept this person, the second person of the Trinity, the Son of God. They're accepting the Word of God, the teachings of God, the things you should do, not Lucifer's do whatever you want philosophy. So that's what these guys are really about, this changing of consciousness, the changing of your philosophy, the world view, the spiritual world view that you have. So anyway, picking up...
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, Dennis, because it's you can tell from that music, we're getting ready for the break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 to order on the web or at BerkeyWater.com.
Currency devaluation, inflation, one and the same. If you had deposited $100,000 in a bank at 1% in a 30-month period dating from May 24, 2005, here is what happened to your funds. The dollar lost 33% of its value in that time frame. The bank paid you 1%. Your $100,000 now has a net purchasing power of $68,000. Here is reality. The devaluation of currency equals real inflation. Keep in mind how the value of your paper assets are measured in dollars. Gold in the same time frame increased 35% in value. Learn how to protect and profit in this truly unstable world economy. Call Midas Resources at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Hello, this is Amy Bjorklund. Thanks to a quantum leap in garlic research, the health benefits of 20 fresh garlic cloves are now available in one tiny capsule. With stabilized allicin, the proven power of garlic has been transformed into what is perhaps the most important medicinal product ever developed, and there's no odor. Stabilized allicin gives you and your family a safe, natural weapon that kills harmful bacteria, viruses, and funguses, all without harming the friendly bacteria in the digestive tract. This means strong immunity, fewer and shorter colds, and the best possible protection from deadly diseases, none of which prescription drugs can offer. What's more, this product can deter mosquitoes from biting you and safely keep fleas and ticks off your pets. Visit truthandexcellence.com, click the Truth and Excellence banner on GCNlive.com, or call me, Amy Bjorklund, personally at 805-595-2711. 805-595-2711.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking about how this use of religion to bring about the New World Order. And I just wanted to touch on one thing. People do not understand that this idea of dualism. There are two gods. I mean, the God that we worship and the other God, and there really are people who worship the other God. This is, of course, what the Zoroastrians were all about. They believed that there were two sides to God, one good and one evil. The Manichaeans believed that. The Marcions believed that. And, of course, this was the secret of the Gnostics and the Kabbalists. And this has been around for a long time. This is the very essence of the secret that was passed on down through the ages. This is what motivated the Templars and where they got their tremendous power, the Rosicrucians. Yes, and even modern-day masonry. It all evolves around this idea of two gods, and which god are you going to worship, the god of the Bible or the great architect of the universe? Well, with that as a background, of course, certainly they are misusing the religion to bring about this one-world government that the occultists have always wanted to. This means, whether it was Alexander the Great or Stalin or Hitler or Napoleon, they've always wanted to bring about this world government under their control. Well, it looks like they're going to pull it off today unless we can awaken the American people to what's going on. So you pick up the story there, Dennis.
Okay. Once again, what you just said is really important, because I'm afraid a lot of Christians and Jews and others who believe in the God of the Bible have misread or whatever what this battle is. They often are taught by preachers and rabbis and so on to look in a personal matter of, you know, I accept God, and they see God as this individual spiritual being, and Jesus the same way. You know, Jesus is a the Son of God and the Messiah, and 2,000 years ago suffered, and that's pretty much where they leave it. But as I said, what you have to do is recognize that there's a second part to that, whether it's biblical or on the opposite, Satan or Lucifer. And that is, you know, Lucifer isn't the little the figure in the red tights with the horns and so forth. It represents a spiritual philosophy, and Jesus is the Word of God, not just someone who died 2,000 years ago, but the Word of God, meaning what God says do and don't. The opposite of that, you know, the yin and the yang, or what, I hate to use that term, but the opposite would be Satan or Lucifer saying, no, don't listen to what God is saying you do and don't. You be like a god. You can become as God. You decide what's right for you based on the situation. And that's why I went through that sort of values clarification process with Eve. And so that's where we actually see the battle today is played out in these two different spiritual views. The one that says, I'm going to follow the biblical truth, what God says do and don't, the Word of God, as opposed to Lucifer or Satan's spirituality was, no, you be your own God. You decide what's right and wrong for you. And so, unfortunately, a lot of churches, preachers don't, you know, present that, but they really should, because that's where this whole thing is being played out. So anyway, back to Bailey. In 1933, she did a book called The Next 3 Years, projecting what would happen, and she said that the outer form of this World Federation of Nations would be taking shape by 2025. See, she called this the plan that was given to her by these, you know, ascended masters that she was getting channeled through, spiritual demons, what they were. So anyway, this is following a plan. And at this 1998 event I mentioned, New Group of World Servers, Lucis Trust, the Festival Week, was this fellow Dan Wheatley, and he was a Baha'i. Now I mentioned them again because Wheatley isn't just some, you know, isolated person. This is he's pretty much representing the Baha'i faith, the Baha'u'llah. I mentioned back in, I believe, part one, back in 1860, was talking about a world government, world religion, and all that. So this is pretty representative where Wheatley is saying he sees himself as a world citizen. He's attending this festival, and he's a world citizen, and he says, one of my goals is to, my dreams is to cast my vote in a parliament of humanity, and we have to, you know, be very clever about how we pursue the new world order. And so what you've had over the years is a lot of attempts to sort of synthesize various religions into one. John Dewey, humanist, leading humanist, father of progressive education, called it a common faith that they were about. And I then, toward the end of this part three, I give a quotation as to how a lot of the results of this would be recognized by some people. I give Pope Pius XI his warning about all this, that Jesus is being shunted aside, and we need to come back to a recognition of him as our Redeemer, and so on. And so now, having whizzed through that, moving on to part four, I pick up there by mentioning that the government that these elitists want to establish, and they're using religion to pursue, is going to be socialist in nature. And one of the people who, of course, warned us was a Fabian socialist, George Orwell, in his 1984 book.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy.
Order a copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645.
For years, you've been hearing about Herbal Healer Academy and how it's remained the leader in effective, alternative, and natural medicine and education. But how can they continue to hold that title for years on end? The answer is high quality and huge selection. Just visit herbalhealer.com and shop online or request a free catalog. You're bound to find the alternative you're looking for. Did you know that Herbal Healer carries the latest, safest, and effective weight loss products? You can also count on Herbal Healer for the largest selection of safe and natural supplements just for children. And don't forget your pets. Herbal Healer even has natural mineral supplements for all your animals, including horses, cows, and birds. Take a peek at their online calendar, and you're sure to find everything you need, and maybe something you didn't realize you needed. Visit HerbalHealer.com, and don't forget to sign up for the free Herbal Healer newsletter. HerbalHealer.com, working with the power of nature.
The Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA, 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA, 15091.
Well, Dr. Stanback here. Our guest this afternoon will be Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And I just want to mention at this time, you can find Dr. Dennis Cuddy's articles at newsreviews.com. That's newsreviews.com. And his series on mental health screening, his series on the New World Order and religion, the use of religion to bring about the New World Order, and so much other information is really unparalleled. But many of Dr. Cuddy's books are out of print, and one of my favorites, and one we need to get back in print, is called Secret Records Revealed. So basically we're offering a full case of the books, and ordinarily they got a retail about $16.95 each. You get 30 books for $149.95 pre-publication, and if you call in at 1-800-544-8927, why, certainly we will not bill you until such time as we have everything pledged and we're ready to go ahead and print the books. But it's an excellent book. It's been updated with an index, and of course you need an index in all of Dr. Cuddy's books. This has an index. It is an epilogue, and it will be an excellent source of information for you and a means by which you can begin to reach other people. It's an excellent weapon in this truly spiritual battle we're involved in for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So if you'd like to order a pre-publication case of Dr. Cuddy's book, Secret Records Revealed, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And I can tell you that this is a book I keep very close to my side all the time when I'm doing research. Well, let's go on, Dr. Cuddy. You were talking then about the things that are going on behind the scenes as far as, you know, creating the, using religion to bring about the world government. Please pick up the story.
Sure. And the use of religion to promote the world government, it would be socialist in nature. And one of the people who warned us about this, of course, was Orwell in 1984. And just like I began part three with talking about John Rawlings Rees and the psychological manipulation of the public in general, same thing here. Orwell says one of the tactics, he's speaking through O'Brien, who's Big Brother's agent, and O'Brien is saying how what they'd do is quicken the tempo of human life. And see, that way people wouldn't know what was happening. They'd be kept so busy, you know, busy, 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 so they wouldn't be able to resist, you know, reflect, organize, resist. And so another person, even before that, Orwell, was a Monsignor Robert Hugh Benson. He was the son of the Archbishop of Canterbury, and he wrote a book called Lord of the World back in 1907. And if you look at the article that I did here, you'll see that Lord of the World, you can click on that and up will come the actual book, the whole hundreds of pages of the book. Just click on it and up will come that whole book from 1907. You can read it for yourself. And he's talking about this coming dictator, and it'll be the stupendous force of socialism. He specifically mentions that that's what it'll be. It'll gain control. And then he mentions after 1989. Now remember, he's writing in 1907. That's as though you or I this year we're talking about 2089, what would happen that far in the future. He foretold after 1989 the final scheme of Western free trade. Humanitarianism is becoming an actual religion itself. Patriotism has been dying fast. It will mean free trade all over the world. The humanity religion was the only one, end quote. Now, he goes on and on. But the point is that humanity religion is just like I mentioned in earlier parts of the series about Auguste Comte's religion of humanity. They want to shift away from worship the God of the Bible and Jesus Christ to this humanitarianism. Man. Man is the center, not God, man. See, there's the battle again, the spiritual battle. You choose between God, Jesus, or you choose between man. You know, man will become all important, serving man and making up your own mind, man, as to what you will, you know, do and based on a situation, what's right or wrong for you. So those are the two battles, the philosophies. It's not just, you know, personages of God, Jesus versus Lucifer, Satan. It is represented or carried out today in this spiritual battle. These two spiritual philosophies are battling each other, and you have to accept one or the other. Okay. The brother of Benson's stepmother was a founder, I mentioned next, of the Society for Psychical Research. Lots of prominent people. You know, this isn't some late-night weirdo that you see on TV. These had, you know, William James, the father of American psychology, British prime ministers, Balfour and Gladstone, you know, some prominent people. One of the members was Lewis Carroll. And you know Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland. Well, his second book there, Through the Looking Glass, in 1872, you'll notice that the Red Queen tells Alice, you know, Alice from Wonderland, is that, quote, now here you see, they've been running, they're real tired, they're waiting by this tree. Now here you see it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you must run at least twice as fast as that, quote. See, that's a similar thing as to what Orwell was saying in his 1984 about quicken the tempo of human life. These people like Lewis Carroll and these people for many, many years have been in, you know, in symbols and codes projecting what's coming. And so what you have is this case of the Big Brother, as Orwell called them, of the future dictator. Now, we're familiar, you know, with Soviet Nazi dictators, but remember, they were socialists. That's the key. Soviets were international socialists. Nazis were national socialists. They're both socialists. And then what I do in part four is to give, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing of Mrs. Werthmann, because Dr. Sands already had a program, a very good interview with Mrs. Werthmann, but I'll just touch on a couple of things that are relevant to this subject about the use of religion, use of churches. What you may remember, if you heard that interview, is that Mrs. Werthmann, she's now in South Dakota, but about 20 years ago, she infiltrated a peace rally over in Switzerland. Bela Abzug was there speaking fluent German, and they were going to have this meeting with Mikhail Gorbachev. This is, you know, when he was Soviet dictator. And when she was at the meeting, she struck up a conversation with this German communist woman. And she said, well, you know, what's your goal? And they said, well, first, you know, we'll go to Nicaragua, and then we'll get these Mexicans to do something. This was back in the mid-'80s. So we'll get the Mexicans to say, you know, that Southwest U.S. was stolen from us, so we're going to, you know, we got to take that back from them. And so Mrs. Worsen said, you know, golly, how would you do this? I mean, you got to have a large number of people in Mexicans in the U.S. to get this going. And so the German communist said, quote, you Americans are so naive. Your churches are going to do that for us, end quote. And so Mrs. Worthman at that point realized that it was the sanctuary movement, as it's called. And it's been going on for decades. This is a movement that supports a large number of aliens, illegal aliens, into churches. You know, sort of an underground railroad of today, but bringing in people from south of the border. And so the churches would be very, very prominent in this. And so Mrs. Worthman said, well, you know, when's this going to be accomplished? You know, when are you going to sort of pull this off? And so the communist woman said, and this is 1985, she says, quote, it depends on who the U.S. president is. Maybe 2004 or 2006 or 2008. End quote. And so the next thing I do is I put a link to where you can see George Bush happily waving the Mexican flag while he's holding a little girl around the shoulder and they're marching along. Now, that wasn't widespread. You know, that was on almost a secret video that was sent to Mexican Mexican-American, some illegal voters back in the 2004 campaign. So you can see that link, and right after that, I get into some of the specifics, which I won't go into all of them now, but Mrs. Worthman had lived under the communists after World War II. She was in Austria, and she lived under the Nazis, also a dictatorship, during World War II and prior to it, also in Austria. And I mentioned a couple of things. There's a film, good film, called Question 7. It's an award-winning winning film about the churches under communism in East Germany after the Second World War. And then, of course, Dr. Stan has mentioned the book by Erwin Lutzer, Hitler's Cross, about the churches prior to the Second World War. And at this point, I give through a lot of comparisons between the U.S. today and the Nazis, but I won't go into all of that. I'll just go down to one of them. Because what Hitler did was he levied a church tax on the general population. Now, that was money that he got from the hall of the people, and then it was given to churches and religious organizations. And the reason he did that wasn't that he loved them. It was that so preachers and other religious leaders would not criticize Hitler because they'd lose their funding. And so this was a key technique. And what I ask next is, does any of this sound familiar? You know, there's certain things going on with our government and churches today.
Not like a faith-based initiative, something like that.
My goodness, right. How could that have ever popped into your mind? So, yes, so what you have, and then there's a book, of course, that you've mentioned before by a person who was on the inside of the Bush administration, basically laying out a strategy, you know, how they would use the churches and religious leaders for political ends in this country and in the Bush administration. But, you know, I'm not going to, you know, single them out. The Democrats will do the same thing. I mean, they use churches for years as political pulpits for their message. So anyway, the next thing I talk about is the various attempts to bring the religions of the world together. You had the World Parliament of Religions in 1893, then the 100th anniversary in 1993. You had the Temple of Understanding in the 1960s, then the Center for World Thanksgiving in the 80s. That's Thanksgiving Square down in Dallas. Then in the 90s, United Religions Initiative. And then even recently, in case you think the Jews are left out of this, no. On March 20th, 2006, the BBC reported that the chief rabbi of Israel, quote, has called for the creation of a world body with representatives from the major religious groups, a United Nations of religious groups, end quote. So this is all across the board. I've quoted Catholic Pope Paul VI in the past, you know, going, you know, let's have a world authority and all this. So basically what you have is the power elite, as I call them, not only pursuing a world government, but using religion, including religious leaders, to promote this idea. My guess is you can't do this. You could do it gradually, but it would take a long time. So what you'll probably have are a bunch of crises or crisis incidents to sort of shake up the people and get them to be willing to do stuff they wouldn't otherwise be willing. This could include, don't be surprised if over the holidays you have an Al-Qaeda attack somewhere, maybe in the U.S. I don't think that it'll be a hijacked passenger airliner. Everybody in the news say, you know, we've got to watch the airlines and security and all this. I think it's going to be a little different. But we know that the news has just said a lot of al-Qaeda members have just left their training bases in Pakistan and gone through Afghanistan and Iran to, you know, go to the Middle East and maybe here to wreak havoc on what we're doing. Now, Dr. Stan...
But, of course, the thing is, Dennis, nobody ever asks, who's funding Pakistan? Well, that's our tax money. We give them $600 million a year.
Well, their intelligence service, the ISI, is really a sort of arm of the CIA. I mean, and I put that, if you look back at my News with Views column and your listeners to one titled The Media and 9/11, that gives a lot of information about Pakistan, and that's why I mentioned this here, because when I've talked in the past about, you know, Pakistan's role, a lot of people, media types, go, oh, ho-hum, yeah, they're our ally, and so on. Well, that's why I mentioned this. You know, just recently, from bases in Pakistan, al-Qaeda has ordered, I think it's thousands of their trainees to go westward through Afghanistan and Iran to wreak havoc. So, you know, if they're such buddies of ours, this wouldn't be happening. So, anyway, what I say is that we're supposed to have this war on terror, but as Dr. Sands mentioned, if we were seriously had a war on terror, we would have that, you know, southern border sealed. But a recent guest on Dr. Sands' show, Paul Williams, author of The Al-Qaeda Connection, among others, has talked about 9,000 special interests, that's what they call illegal aliens. Now, that means they're from terror-related countries, have been apprehended. But Williams said, you know, those are just the ones apprehended. You got to figure there's maybe 45,000 others. So that's 540,000. I mean, 54,000. So if you just took 1%, if just 1% of those illegal aliens were terrorists from terror-related countries, that's 540 terrorists loose in the U.S. today. Just think of the damage those people could do.
Well, you know, there's a new book out by Bill Gertz, and Bill Gertz, of course, supposedly gets all of this leaked information from the CIA and the intelligence agencies, and he says, you know, our intelligence agencies are just so inept, they do not have one single investigation of al-Qaeda going on in the United States at the present time. And not only that, but we don't have any agents who can speak Arabic, and we can't infiltrate the organizations. And I would like to say, if we can't infiltrate the organizations, that's why we didn't know what was going to happen on 9/11. Here you got a guy named Johnny Lynn Walker from Santa Rosa who's able to go over to Afghanistan and meet with Osama bin Laden before the 9/11 attack, and an intelligence organization with, you know, $40 or more billion a year to spend on intelligence just couldn't infiltrate the organization. Let me tell you, if you read the presidential decision directive, the PD daily briefing for August 6th, 2001, it said in that they had 70 investigations of al-Qaeda going on at that time before the 9/11 attack, and yet we don't have any investigations going on today. Do you really believe that, or is it possible that everything is being manipulated, everything is a mirage, that this whole thing is being created, you know, to justify the implementation of a dictatorship here in America? Could they possibly be doing that? Would they possibly be sending our boys over to Iraq to fight in a war we never had any intention of winning because they wanted a war to be used as a great distraction as we move towards a dictatorship here at home? We just asked the question.
The way I've put it in the past is it realistic to believe that? That's the sort of test you give. And the thing that I ask people if they think about these terrorist attacks in 9/11, let's say, is it realistic to believe that Osama bin Laden, you know, lugging around his machine that he has to have to, you know, cleanse his body.
His dialysis machine.
Yeah, his dialysis machine through the mountains of Tora Bora. Is it realistic to believe that if he can get 19 people willing to kill themselves, I mean literally kill themselves, that he couldn't get one more in 5 years to sort of, you know, just come ashore in Canada and come across the border and tamper with some, you know, railroad trackers? I mean, it staggers the imagination that anybody could get 19 people willing to kill themselves, but they can't find one other person to go around, you know, throwing a cherry bomb into some restaurant's toilet or something. But that's what we're supposed to believe. And we're supposed to believe that we got this real war on terror that we're really concerned about when, as William said, our own government knows 9,000, quote, special interests from terror-related countries have been apprehended coming in. And he says, you know, five times that more probably were not apprehended. So, and I'm trying to be generous about this. I said if just 1% of them were terrorists, that's 540. And I don't want to give them any ideas, but just think in your average everyday life, whether it's rail, track, you know, whatever, what 540 dedicated, determined, well-trained terrorists could do, but they haven't. In 5 years, they haven't. Now, you may say, well, the government, you know, secretly is really monitoring it. Not one of them? I mean, they got all 540, not 539? So anyway, the whole thing just looks very suspicious. But since the time is closing up, I'll just finish with this. The whole idea of these elitists, the way they are rationalizing this stuff, is that, well, you know, we need to do this, we need to synthesize religions, we need to use religion for this world government, it's peace that we want, you know, peace, peace, peace. But remember that in the Bible, when Jesus talked about peace, he said, you know, I bring division. I'm not talking about the peace of the world as you know peace in the world. I'm talking about the spiritual peace, the choice of the way of God, biblical truth. That's
God bless.
Peace.
We're out of time.
Pastor
Thanks
David Whitney with Institute Bye. On the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Good morning, honey. Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water, so I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin, and wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a Travel Berkey today for only $209, or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
Shelly, you look exhausted. What's wrong?
I am so tired. I just get so hot at night and can't sleep. I have tried everything, all kinds of fans, sheets, pillows, you name it, I've tried it.
My husband has always been a hot sleeper. He's never had a good night's sleep. Then we discovered something that really helped. It's called the Bedfan Personal Cooling System.
The what?
The Bedfan Personal Cooling System. It will keep you cool all night long and will work for everyone that sleeps hot, no matter what the reason. You can see it at bedfan.com.
How well are you sleeping? Are you getting the rest your body needs? Sleep disorder centers across the country recommend that you must stay cool to get a good night's sleep. The Bedfan will keep you cool and give you the restful sleep you deserve. With our 30-day 100% guarantee, you risk nothing. Are you a hot sleeper? Is your partner a hot sleeper? Or are you looking for the perfect gift for that person who has everything? The Bedfan is the answer. Visit us today at www.bedfan.com. That's www.bedfan.com.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Dr. Cuddy was talking about my interview with Mrs. Werthmann. Actually, she lived in Austria at the time of when the Nazis came in. and we've included my interview with her in our new tape set on the Holocaust, What Really Happened. And you'll hear a gentleman who was Auschwitz. You'll hear a woman who was in Germany at the time and taken to a concentration camp. And then, of course, you'll hear Mrs. Werthmann, and you'll hear actually four great interviews there in the four tape set, The Holocaust, What Really Happened. And then let me mention once again, if you'd like to get the case of Dr. Cuddy's books, a pre-publication price, $149.95 plus shipping, an entire case of the books, and you won't have to pay for them. Of course, we will get you your Visa card now, but we won't cash it until we're ready to actually print. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You'll be helping Dr. Cuddy, you'll be helping us, but you'll be helping yourself. Influence other people. It's a great book. That's Secret Records Revealed. And then I want to mention that we're offering now a book that's been out of print for a long period of time. They're hard to come by, called Kiss the Boys Goodbye, written by Monica Jensen Stevenson. It goes with a four-tape set we have, The Men We Left Behind, where we actually have an interview with Monica Jensen Stevenson. You can get the book. They're now the used books, but they're in good shape. Of course, they're hardback, and most of them still have the dust cover on them for $21.95. And then, of course, you can get the four-tape set of The Men We Left Behind at a discount, a $5 discount. So you can get the two of them together for $39.95, the four-tape set, and, of course, the book. So we certainly highly recommend it, too. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the Men We Left Behind special. We have a special on Spite House as well, and you can get the book, and you can get the four tape set for $24.95, or you can get the book alone for $6.95, but we hope that you'll get the four tape set along with it. That's called One Man Return, The Story of Bobby Garwood. And of course, both of these books have been actively suppressed for many years. The first book was called back. Then, of course, it was the publisher refused to publish it, to distribute it. Why? Because it talked about the CIA involvement in drugs and of course, the debacle that Vietnam really was. And, of course, the second book, Spite House, went into the fact that they actually had sniper teams that went out to kill Americans who defected, but we can't let the American people know what really happened in Vietnam or about all the men we abandoned over there. After all, who'd want to go off and fight for a country that would abandon its own men and betray them intentionally and knowingly and then lie to the American people about it? So these books, one, The Men We Left Behind, you get the book for $21.95, and the book and the four-tape set for $39.95, or you can get The Spite House and the four tapes of One Man Return for $24.95. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Now, the Spite House is, of course, in soft cover. They're all used, but they're in pretty good shape. And I think you'll enjoy these books. You need them in your library. Somebody thinks they're important because they were all suppressed. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get either the Men We Left Behind or the Men We Left Behind special, the Spite House or the Spite House special, and, of course, if you'd like to get that four-tape set on the Holocaust, What Really Happened, and we have so many other items at Radio Liberty. Remember, you can listen to our program 5 hours a day on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com or AmericanNewsNet.com or GCNLive.com or RBNLive.com or, of course, SoundWave, and then, of course, RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, we ask you to remember, we are on shortwave as well. It's an expensive proposition. We do hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we reach out 5 hours, 5 days a week. And then pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout. developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine for what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And, well, we ordinarily welcome your calls from out across America, but please don't call until we ask for calls, because we are with this Colonel Ron Ray, who was the Assistant Secretary of Defense under the Reagan administration. Certainly is a practicing lawyer. He's filed a number of briefs with the highest courts in our land. But, of course, he's also today somebody who's trying to get the truth out about what's really going on behind the scenes today. And we're going to talk today about the great tax-exempt foundations. People often wonder why things are going on the way they are and what we can do to change things. And it almost as it seems that if the other side has just so much wealth and power, but you can't understand anything that's going on until you understand the tax-exempt foundations that are dedicated to the destruction of the America we live in. With that as a background, Colonel Ray, thank you very much for being with us.
Dan, it's always a privilege and a pleasure, and this ought to be interesting, because I think you know a great deal about foundations, and I really was introduced to them by reading the book that you put back in print through your efforts, The Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Renee Wurmser, published in the 1950s, and it had been out of print for years.
Well, of course, we're just privileged to have the opportunity to actually keep that in print. So why don't you pick up the story and explain to our listeners why they need to be concerned about this concentration of power?
Well, it's an interesting thing. Let's do a little primer, a foundation primer. Most people know about charitable giving, and they do give to their church, and they give to the Boy Scouts, and they give to the Red Cross and local charities. But a private foundation, is an organization really kind of created under our income tax code, which permits those with a substantial sum of money, a wealthy individual or family, to be used restricted to a charitable or philanthropic purpose. And they therefore, that when they create it, they make a gift into that foundation, they get a deduction. So instead of having a huge estate tax problem, they create a foundation, they make a donation to it, and they get a deduction at the time they put it in, and they essentially are able to retain a certain degree of control. In many instances, the boards include family members, and they're established supposedly to advance the philanthropic interests of the donor. But it's one of the things that they do, and they're not supposed to be involved in public policy work. They're not supposed to engage in activities aimed at influencing elections or direct lobbying to influence legislation. But in point of fact, the three different investigations that occurred in the 20th century, particularly the last two, reflected that they had in fact a policy goal, and that the donations given by the foundation created, like the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and others of the great foundations, they were bent on changing in an undemocratic fashion our society,
laws and institutions across the spectrum at the state and national level.
And I think this is one of the most carefully kept secrets in our land today. They set out many years ago to change the moral fabric of our society by financing the Kinsey investigation. Alfred Kinsey, who was a pervert and a homosexual, he really wanted to destroy the moral foundation of America. But one of the most carefully kept secrets is that we can thank the Rockefeller Foundation for funding Alfred Kinsey's fraudulent work. And, of course, they infiltrated our universities, they infiltrated the people who published our encyclopedias. They had their agents at every level of our society. We'll be back in just a moment with Colonel Ron Ray. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. Our special guest this afternoon is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're going to be talking today about the great tax-exempt foundations. Most people imagine these philanthropic foundations are there to help people and cure the ills of society. Whereas the truth of the matter is, of course, that they have an entirely different agenda. So, Colonel Ray, you pick up the story.
Well, let's give some names that they may know. They may not have heard of the Ford or Rockefeller Foundation, although many have. I went online and an encyclopedia online as of the end of 2004, and there have been some significant developments. The largest foundations, American-based, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Seattle, Washington, is over $26 billion. That's been significantly increased because of a gift from Warren Buffett that was made in 2006. The Lilly Endowment of Indianapolis, over nearly $11 billion. The Ford Foundation of New York City, nearly $11 billion. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Princeton, New Jersey, nearly $8 billion. The Kellogg Foundation of Battle Creek, Michigan. The Packard Foundation in California. The Hewitt Foundation, Menlo Park, California. The Moore Foundation in San Francisco. The MacArthur Foundation in Chicago. Pew Charitable Trust in Philadelphia. What also came up when I was sort of doing some research beyond the things we've talked about, the Reese Committee investigations, a little bit less I've talked about and gotten into work done by Thomas Walsh, a representative Democrat from Montana in 1912, concerned about the concentration of power and the treatment of workers by Carnegie and Rockefeller, and then later on Congressman Cox from Georgia conducted investigations in 1951 and 52. He died while he was in the middle of those, and then Reese came along in 1953 and 54. But what I found was a list of a 1999, the top 50 U.S. foundations awarding grants for media and communications. People are concerned that maybe we don't get the truth, and maybe maybe there's a bias of some kind, or there's a slant in the media. Well, in 1999...
Hold that thought, Ron. We're going to be back here in just a moment as we bring all of our other stations on board. And, of course, our guest is Colonel Ron Ray from First Principles. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Colonel Ray. And Colonel Ray was just listing some of the major tax-exempt foundations that are funding, you know, so much of what's going on today. And pick up the story there.
Well, I was saying that I discovered a list of the donations given for media and communications. In 1999, $250 million was given to have an impact on media and communications, and they have gotten in recent years increasingly. Of course, Lilly always has supported that. They've gotten into a handful of foundations are providing the seed capital for not only in healthcare, not only enhancing health care, but actually changing health care. Big names like Robert Wood Johnson, the Kellogg Foundation, the California Endowment Health Care Foundation, and the Commonwealth Fund are just a few. So this is something the Wall Street Journal writes about these things once in a while, but it's something you can get online and take a look at Congressman Eugene Cox, Democrat from Georgia, and he made a finding. in 1952. Foundations and organizations are using their resources for purposes other than the purposes for which they were established, and especially to determine which such foundations and organizations are using their resources for un-American and subversive activities and for purposes not in the interest or tradition of the United States of America. That was the purpose of his investigation.
And I think what's so important is for our listeners to understand that the great tax-exempt foundations have been funding primarily the radical left. They funded the socialist movement. They funded the communist movement in the United States. They used their influence, of course, to influence policy internationally in favor of communism and socialism, which really doesn't make sense. You would think that the Ford and the Rockefellers and the Carnegies would be in favor of free enterprise and in capitalism. But then, of course, nothing is it appears to be, because if you look at communism and socialism carefully, what do you find? Why, it's a concentration of power in the hands of a ruling elite, and that's just what these people of great wealth and power wanted, was concentration of power where they would be able to rule the common folks. So pick up the story there.
Well, I think what's interesting is that going all the way back to Walsh. Now, Walsh is a man that most people haven't heard of. Tom Walsh was a representative. He in 1915 he led investigations into concentrations of power, the Ludlow massacre involving the killing of women and children in a mining camp on a Rockefeller-owned Colorado Fuel and Iron Company, describing brutal actions against mine workers. And John D. Rockefeller's testimony was published in the New York Times, claiming he had no knowledge of fixed prices, working conditions that involved thousands of employees living in tents without adequate food. You know, what was interesting is that he became a United States Senator as a result of standing up for the little guy, and he was nominated as a United States Senator to be Attorney General of President Franklin D. Roosevelt, 1933. And on the train on the way to accept his appointment after the inauguration of Franklin Roosevelt, he died on the train suddenly, and was eventually taken to Washington and held in state, and then eventually taken back to Montana. But Cox tried very hard. He was attacked when his investigation came forward. The House floor debate focused on personal attacks on Cox, trying to stop him. He was accused of being a rapist, racist, and anti-Semite. He named foundation support of known communists. He forced a vote and began an investigation over their opposition. However, Cox mysteriously died was taken to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and when Carol Reese, who was the minority leader on the Cox investigation in 52, went to look for the files, hoping to start an investigation if the Republicans possibly captured the Congress as they did in November of 52, the files had mysteriously disappeared.
And I think this is what we find over and over again. The last thing they want is for the American people to realize the truth. And what really energizes these people of great wealth and great power who want to transform America from what it was, a free society, into, of course, a totally controlled society under the control of a ruling elite.
It's a simple thing to do. The Democratic Congress claims to be grassroots-oriented. They're not top-down. They're not representing the big corporations, big business the Republicans have always been very closely aligned to. In fact, Wall Street, according to the Wall Street Journal here the last few days, it gave more money, Goldman Sachs and some of the big Wall Street firms actually gave more money to the Democrats than they did to the Republicans, which has not been true all the way back to 1994. So a majority of Wall Street money went to the Democrats this time. And all we need to do is have those willing to investigate. The use of tax-exempt foundations to advance the political agenda would mean that the tax exemption should be denied. It's a simple thing. Are they using them for you don't have to like the politics. Doesn't matter which side it's on. They're not supposed to use their money to advance a political agenda and to work undemocratic change in state laws or in national laws, which they have been doing for decades. In fact, Cox made this finding. No reasonable doubt concerning many efforts of the Communist Party to infiltrate foundations and to make use, as far as it was possible, of foundation grants to support socialism and communism and communist sympathizers. The committee is satisfied that as long as 20 years ago, Moscow decided upon a program of infiltrating cultural and educational groups using foundation money. Now, that was in 1952. He didn't finish because he died suddenly and somewhat mysteriously. But Congressman Reese obtained what was left of the Cox Committee data and pushed for further investigation after the Republicans, after decades out of power, captured the presidency. Dwight D. Eisenhower was elected in November of 1952, and both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House, were in Republican hands. So Carol Reese, who'd been the minority leader on that Cox Committee in the previous Congress, he said, "I'm going to determine which of such foundations and organizations are using their resources for un-American and subversive activities or political purposes, propaganda, or attempts to influence legislation."
And of course, really very interesting, in the foreword of the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we do carry, and we're the only source of it in the country, Congressman Reese said this: "The purpose of our investigation was to determine to what extent, if any, the funds of the Great Foundation were being used to fund Marxism and destroy the love which every American should have for his way of life." And then, of course, he proceeded to, of course, do the investigation. And there is no question, that was what it was about. It was to destroy America and to destroy love of our country. And this is where the money of the Great Tax Exempt Foundation was going, in violation of the laws, but they had bought and purchased so many congressmen, and of course they were in really positions of control, that eventually they were able to stop the committee investigation. The last thing they want is for the American people to understand, and of course this whole thing ties into the Council on Foreign Relations, and in later years the Trilateral Commission, and all of the, what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. So pick up the story, Ron.
Well, it's interesting that what they did find, Reese's investigation did go on for a year and a half. It wasn't given the publicity by the media. Again, there's an interlock between much of the media, and the foundation money does go for grants to media. And obviously, we found out here in the last few years that the Bush administration was paying money to so-called conservative columnists to write articles supporting of their various policies, and so there's no question that money will influence what is written. The evidence had been gathered this was sort of a conclusion that he reached. The evidence that had been gathered, which was extensive, because they had there had been some investigation under Cox. There had certainly been investigation for 2 years, 52, 53, and in 54. This is what the Reese report said. "The evidence that has been gathered by the staff pointed to one simple underlying situation, namely that the major foundations, by subsidizing collectivist-minded educators, had financed a socialist trend in American education and American government." That's pretty strong. And I also looked. Reese was a very influential guy. He had been. This is not a marginal conservative man that such as the times when Jesse Helms was kind of a lone wolf. You hear Ron Paul many times taking a very constitutionally correct position and standing alone. He arose to be. He was a World War I Army hero from East Tennessee. Generally the area that Howard Baker, later a representative and a U.S. senator from Tennessee, had started in the same East Tennessee area. Very strong Union sympathies going all the way back to the war between the states. And he became chairman of the Republican National Committee. And so this is a man of great influence. He married the daughter of a United States senator from West Virginia. I think the name of the family was Goff. And Nathan Goff, very influential. And this is, he said this: "Foundations have supported conscious distortion of American history, propagandized blindly for the United Nations as the hope of the world, supported that organization's agencies to an extent beyond general public acceptance, and leaned toward a general leftist approach to international problems, also promoting humanism as well as globalism." And it's went on for decades, and the attempts to investigate were brought to a stop. The White House, working with a left-wing Democrat from Ohio named Wayne Hayes, who who interrupted the one witness more than 100 times and brought the committee hearings to a standstill.
And that's what they do. They just keep, they get in there, and I think it was, I forgot, but it was 153 times in 100 minutes, something like that. Constant interruptions. Why? Because the last thing they wanted, of course, was for the American people to find out the truth. Any more than they want the American people to find out the truth about what's going on today. As we move away from our foundation in freedom towards the merger of the United States with Mexico and Canada as stepping stones to the establishment of a new world order.
You mean you didn't vote this last election for the North American Union?
Well, Ron, you go right ahead.
Well, I think it's an important thing to know. Where I came into this in 1990 was a realization when I was really exposed to the fact that a U.S. Supreme Court unanimously held in 1992, actually February 29th, 1992, after years of looking at a particular case and studying the foundations of America, going all the way back to the Spanish King and Queen, Isabel and Ferdinand's charter to Christopher Columbus in 1492. Now, please note this. The U.S. Supreme Court studied our history from 1492 to 1892, a 400-year period. And at the end of the day, they looked at 66 historical sources that were listed in this case. 9-0, they upheld the notion that America had been founded as a Christian nation. That is, our laws and institutions presuppose a creator, and they came, and our rights and the source of our law, as the Declaration said, the laws of nature and of nature's God, that there is a creator, and that our rights and the form of our laws and civil government come from the laws of nature and of nature's God. And those eight words define a great deal. Well, I'd finished second in my class in law school. I'd been educated at the finest college in Kentucky, Center College. I had gone on into the Marine Corps. I had gone to every Marine Corps college from the basic school to amphibious warfare school, the Command and General Staff College, the National Defense University, the NATO War College in England. I had wonderful opportunities to learn. And after all that time, until 1990, I didn't understand. I finished second in my class in law school, and I didn't know that the Supreme Court had not once but four times held America was a Christian nation. I hadn't been taught those things. And after 1990, I set about studying our history and began to realize that the truth about who we are as a people has been suppressed from many for decades in public education and for decades in churches and decades in books that are published. And you have to dig, but it's there. And each American, each mother, each father, family members have a duty, because they're not going to get it in our public institutions. They're going to have a duty to teach our children so they would understand why our national motto is In God We Trust, and we are called and have been called One Nation Under God all the way back in our founding period.
And it's such a shame that this is never taught in our schools, that it is not taught in our colleges, and that the average lawyer who completes law school has never even read the Constitution, does not understand the foundations of our freedom or the whole concept of America, and that was to limit the power of government so that men could be free.
Tying down, Thomas Jefferson said, tie them, he said, we need to tie public officials down with the chains of the Constitution. And here's something for each of your listeners to know. Get a hold of the state constitution. Read the Declaration of Independence, your own state constitution, the Bill of Rights. Read the Constitution, the Northwest Ordinance, these founding documents. And when you are asked for the support of anyone running for dog catcher, county judge, county sheriff, magistrate, representative, state or local, state or senator, U.S. senator, ask them if they've read those documents. They're going to take an oath in a state. State officials that they uphold the Constitution of the United States and of their state. And you know, most lawyers and most judges have never read their state constitution.
Well, of course, I think this draws us to another thing, and that is that, of course, that Radio Liberty carries something called the founding documents, and we'll talk about that in just a minute here. Well, Colonel Ray is simply saying that most of our elected officials, most of our lawyers, And so many people who are certainly holding office at the highest levels of our land do not understand the Constitution. Do not understand the very essence of the Constitution. That's one thing that we have, well, actually we're offering now. It's called the Founding Documents. It's put together by Pastor Chuck Baldwin. And it is about 50 of the major documents of America. You know, George Washington's farewell address, the Northwest Ordinance, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, the Bill of Rights, the Mayflower Compact, all of the important documents that have to do with America. They're called the Freedom Documents, and they are available for Radio Liberty. They're about 2 inches thick. They're vitally important, and you want to keep them close to you at all times. So go ahead, pick up the story there, Ron.
Well, I would say, and I appreciate that, and I've got a copy of Chuck Baldwin's documents. I have a few others, and I've focused on some of the five or six or seven most important, and that is the Declaration of Independence. How many ask people if they know that November 11th, before it was Veterans Day, it was Armistice Day since 1918, but before that it was called Mayflower Compact Day. The first civil government document in American history was written at Plymouth, November the 11th, 1620, and it said the purpose of our civil government was to advance the Christian faith. But anyway, that document has not been taught. We used to have a Mayflower Compact Day, which prepared people for Thanksgiving, and you had a reason to really be thankful for the land in which we live. So I would just encourage people, if you're interested, we have an American History Restoration Project that I'm a volunteer and work closely with a First Principles Press, which preserves and promotes the reading of true American history and documents and distributes them where they can to elected public officials and influential figures locally as an educational project, and you might find something on there of interest to you. FirstPrinciplesPress.org. That's FirstPrinciplesPress.org. And also, there's a link to RSVP America, Restoring Social Virtue and Purity in America, RSVPAmerica.org, where you'll learn about this discussion we've been having about the funding of the Kinsey Report and the ALI Model Penal Code to change 52 laws in the states, and the ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, has worked on this for the last from 2000 to 2004, and published a for every state legislator member. Over 2,400 got a copy of it. A call for a restoration of legal protections in state criminal codes for marriage, women, and children, which were eliminated based on funding of great foundations to promote the Kinsey reports as a scientific basis for changing criminal law and removing protections for marriage, women, and children. So there's two websites you can take a look at, and obviously Dr. Stan's materials are extremely vital for you to have for homeschool, and even if you don't homeschool your young folks, they need to be taught what they're not going to get in church and school and college. And to some extent, we're getting a little of it into the military, and there have been public officials who responded, and over the last few years, James Madison's birthday has been acknowledged as in March, has been called Liberty Day, and Robert Byrd has passed the legislation that declares a day in the fall as Constitution Day, where public schools who get public monies have to teach the Constitution. Liberty Day points to the Declaration, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. And it was adopted in 2002 by Donald Rumsfeld because he acknowledged that young people coming into a military today don't understand the oath they take. And not understanding their oath, he put those documents up. He said, the Declaration, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution constitute the foundation of our government and are the basis for our liberty and our prosperity. And said that on that website and put out a and for 3 years in a row, the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights, including the preamble to the Bill of Rights, which is very important, and in many copies of the little pocket constitutions and declarations, you do not get the Bill of Rights, or you don't get the preamble to the Bill of Rights, so you're not getting the whole thing. So anyway, for 3 years, graduating the new midshipmen, commissioned as second lieutenants or ensigns, were getting not only a diploma and a handshake, they were getting the Constitution they swore to uphold.
And I think everybody should read it, should study it, should understand from whence our freedom comes. And, of course, it was a basic mistrust of government that was the very essence of what America was all about. And, of course, somebody once said, you know, a wise man mistrusts his neighbor, a wiser man mistrusts his neighbor and himself, but the wisest man mistrusts government. And I think that this was, of course, what motivated our people to form the type of government they did, where the power of the government was limited by the change of the Constitution and men could be free. But isn't it strange we never talk about that anymore? We just got to have more government to protect us from Osama bin Laden. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're talking about the Great Tax System Foundations and how they were organized, well, many of them almost 100 years ago. Certainly they were around in the early part of the last century, and they were organized to transform America, and yet probably there's not one in 1,000 Americans has ever heard much of what we're talking about today, Ron.
No, they haven't, and I think another way to put it, I think B. Carroll Reese was really trying to reach out across the because when he was shut down, told there would be no more media coverage, no more political capital from investigations, and no more funding to continue hearings, he negotiated with Wayne Hayes, who was working with somebody in the White House, Eisenhower White House. This is a liberal Democrat working for somebody in the supposedly conservative Republican White House. Basically, he negotiated enough funding to publish a committee report, and it's nearly 800 pages long and very difficult to find. It's available, but start by reading the Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and you'll have some idea. But I thought Reese said something very well, and I think this was probably in the introduction to the report. He said, "It seems to this committee that there is a strong tendency on the part of many of the educators and social scientists whose research is favored by the major foundations toward the concept that there are no absolutes." Let me say that again. He found that those who they were promoting, scholars, educators, social scientists, that there were no absolutes. He goes on, that everything is indeterminate. There are no standards of conduct, morals, ethics, and governments are to be deemed inviolate, that everything, including basic moral law, is subject to change. In other words, he recognized that what they were promoting were two things, no absolutes and moral relativism. That is, situational ethics, and it depends on this and that and the other thing. And so what you get is arbitrary instead of getting the notion that our government was founded on absolutes. Ten Commandments was the basis of much of the criminal law in every state, and that can be found by anybody taking the time to get in the law books. So what we really have been fighting is, what you see is, you listen to people talk. How do you feel about that? You know, and it's as if you stand around listening to people talking about what they think and what they feel, and it's okay for situational ethics or moral relativism is if somebody feels it's okay, somebody feels it's not okay, and we're all standing there nodding, and isn't it nice we can all do that, as opposed to there's no right and wrong, there are no absolutes. And that's almost a total change of something that undergirds our society. The assumptions have shifted dramatically, and the foundations are responsible for that.
All right, fine. And Colonel Ray is basically saying that one of the basic themes that has been pushed for, you know, by the foundations for well over half to three-quarters of a century was this idea that there are no absolutes. There's no right. There's no wrong. It's how you feel about things. That should determine, you know, how we react as a society. Well, of course, that really gets down to the very essence. Is there a God? Does that God have certain rules that we're supposed to follow? And if we don't follow it, are there consequences? And I will tell you that there are consequences today in America. We have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease because they listened to the Centers for Disease Control and their doctors and the Federal Drug Administration and the NIH, who said, go ahead, do whatever you want to, just protect yourself, you know. Well, there are rules. There are regulations, they've been laid out by the God Almighty, and there are consequences, And an awful lot of people, of course, will pay those consequences for the rest of their life. Colonel Goyer, right ahead and pick this story up because I think it's so vitally important that people understand. People say, oh, you think there's a conspiracy. No, I don't think there's a conspiracy. I think it's right out in the open. All you need to do is read what these people are doing. I mean, who do you think was funding this gay march that was going to be held over in Jerusalem? It was the Ford Foundation. This was brought out last night by our guest, Barry Shammes. But the Ford Foundation was funding this gay march through the streets of Jerusalem. Fortunately, it was called off. But this is the sort of thing they're funding all throughout our country today. So go ahead, Colonel.
Well, I'd also point out, to as I've looked at the history of the foundations, and as Reese and Cox, and going back to the senator from Montana, Walsh, who died on the train going to Washington for Roosevelt's inauguration, there weren't any Muslims on the board of these foundations. These ones, there weren't any radical or otherwise. They weren't Islamo-fascists. They were changing our country from within. They were doing it in an undemocratic fashion. And in the period of time this was occurring, we fought World War One, we fought the Banana Wars in the Caribbean, where United Fruit Company, much stock owned by Brown Brothers Harriman, which had a partner named Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the president, and we fought World War Two. And we fought the Korean War, the Cold War, the Vietnam War, 21 years it lasted, against a country the size of the state of Mississippi. And again, this is all was happening within our country. And while we were having lots of different foreign enemies, we had, if those of you out there who took an oath of office at any point in time as an elected official, appointed official, a military, police, a fire, take it. Your oath says that you support and defend the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic. And it clearly means that while we have foreign enemies, we have domestic enemies, and that we need to be vigilant. And I always loved Ronald Reagan. I think Carol Reese would have loved it. He said about the communists and the Soviet Union, he said, always trust, but always verify. And trust and verify is what needs to be done. And with so many people are misinformed, there's so much propaganda, there's so much very careful operative conditioning going on in terms of television and music and one things to move people, and we need to get back. The greatest bumper sticker I ever saw, Stan, says television eats books. And you need to turn off your television, read this history of the foundations, their power and influence, and begin to realize, so that you can answer the question of your children ask, who broke this place, when they see a run-down area and they see our factories closed and jobs being transferred all. Who broke this place, Dad? Who broke this place? Well, you'll know. Undemocratic change. Funded by tax-exempt foundations to a large part with a design, with a plan to create a global economy.
And I think it's so important to understand the great tax-exempt foundations interlock with the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Royal Institute for International Affairs and the Club of Rome, and we could go on for about 15 minutes with all of these internationalist organizations who have no loyalty to the United States. They have an internationalist dream. And what their plan is today is, first of all, to impoverish our people, transfer our industrial capacity overseas, to transfer our jobs overseas, to bring in lots of people, you know, first of all, with visas, on one hand, who can take the jobs of people here because they'll work for much less, and secondly, of course, to have unrestricted migration, to bring, of course, as many people as they want to from Mexico. Millions, probably, we've got close between 20 and 30 million here at the very present time. They're not telling you that, of course. But what they really want to do is merge the United States and Mexico and Canada. And that's why they refuse to close the southern border. Why they continue their catch-and-release program on the border. You catch people who are coming in illegally, and then, of course, if they're not Mexican, who you take across the border and release, you take the other ones and you promptly release them and tell them to come back in a few weeks for a deportation hearing, and you'd never guess what happens. They don't come back.
Well, we had some of the best immigration laws in the world between 1925 and 1965, And it's an interesting study to look at, see who funded the movement against those laws. And they began to break down and be altered in 1965 in undemocratic fashion and over. So here we are 40 years later, and the last 5 or 10 years they've been virtually wide open, and we are moving from a nation to a regional government as part of a larger global economy with other global institutions that are not hard to be seen. And that was all created by wealth, and some of that wealth was right here in the United States, and it wasn't being done at the ballot box in a democratic fashion. It was being done in an undemocratic fashion, and far too many members of We the People didn't speak out and ask their representatives to see to how come they can retain, while they have a political agenda, a political plan for this country, how they can retain their tax-exempt status while they spend the money to do undemocratic change in our law institutions, professions, and throughout the society.
What I think the most amazing thing is, of course, the other side knows the American people want to maintain their freedom and the sovereignty of our nation, so everything has to be done secretly, and everything is being done secretly. The average individual has no idea what's going on or what the master plan is, and he thinks these things are happening simply by accident or by ineptitude, and he doesn't understand that in large part that what's going on in the Middle East is a wonderful diversion. And as our attention is focused on the tragedy and the people dying over in the Middle East, both American and, of course, Arab and Palestinian and Israeli, why we are losing our freedom here at home. That's the plan. Telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Colonel Ron Ray. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, I was saying I probably had a privilege in the kind of work that I've done and have done in public interest law, and I've been in Washington a lot, but I've had a lot of contact with churches and church leaders and Christian leaders across the country, and I've pointed out that there was a specific finding in to many of them, a specific finding in the Reese Committee that should have been of interest to people who consider themselves a Christian or who are regular churchgoers. And he went on in his quote, he said that these social scientists, educators, writers who they support take no principle for granted as a principle in judicial reasoning, however fundamental it may have been deemed under our Judaic Christian moral system. He said, this is a finding of the committee. The foundation-sponsored Kinsey report was deliberately designed as an attack, a direct attack on Judaic Christian morality. And I've said to many pastors and elders and deacons in churches across the country, don't you think your church should have an interest in a finding where Congress warns you that the sexual revolution and the covert legal revolution that changed laws and we went from having a child protective society to a child abusive society, that this was deliberately designed, that the Indiana University's Kinsey reports were deliberately designed as a direct attack on Judaic Christian morality, and were used, the ALEC paper, American Legislative Exchange Council paper, says they were used in changing bringing the model penal code into all 50 states, changing our laws so that married women and children no longer were protected by 52 criminal laws that put criminals away for a long time, but in fact they were either decriminalized or the penalties were lessened. So you see child molesters and pedophiles and others who can walk out of court or get a slap on the wrist or go into counseling rather than have the kind of penalties that were once assessed that protected marriage, that protected women, and protected children. And you know, I got so many of them to give me a blank stare that they didn't think that Congress making that finding had anything to do with their programs in their local church.
Well, let's go to see what Mike has to say here. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, a little of both. Earlier in the program, you were talking about the ruling elite. And, you know, there are many people in our country that believe firmly in socialism and democracy and socialistic democracy. And these people, at the same time, are extremely cognizant of the problems connected with the ruling elite or the aristocracy or whatever they want to call it. But they don't see the connection between the two, how the one produces the other. So how do you address that and reveal that and make it clear what's going on?
All right, I think that's a very, very good point. Colonel, would you mind addressing that?
Well, you know, there was a cartoon. There was a cartoon in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in 1911. You've probably seen it, and it showed some of the biggest men in business, J.P. Morgan, Teddy Roosevelt, others, Carnegie, and others, welcoming Karl Marx to the United States. And I think a lot of people during the Cold War, propaganda always said that we were capitalism versus communism, freedom versus slavery. But in point of fact, from the very beginning of the Bolshevik Revolution, you had Arm & Hammer and other capitalists over there finding out that a police state or a communist system like the one in Red China or someplace else is a perfect place for capitalism to have control of a market. And you don't have this, you know, as Rockefeller often said, you know, I don't believe in competition. Competition is sin. I want a monopoly. Well, capitalism and communism are almost two sides of the same coin, and they certainly can and have cooperated in the 20th century, and you can see that everywhere. So, you know, socialism, the difference between socialism and communism, I heard a general once tell me, he said, communism is just socialism with tanks. And I thought that was a clever statement. But I don't think people realize that America was founded as a free enterprise. We were not capitalist. People could work and they could have their own business. And probably one of the great businesses in our society, the private farm, has been under attack systematically by these elites and the foundations for a long time, because they were able to provide for themselves and have money left over to cash crops they could sell. And certainly China was exporting tobacco, and we went through this whole thing with the attack on the tobacco companies, and many, many farms were held together, family farms were held together by tobacco, which has all but been outlawed in terms of producing it. Now we're importing tobacco from China, of all places.
And I think what's so difficult for people and for our socialists to understand is the very people who are that they hate the most, the wicked capitalists, the very people who are promoting the philosophy that the socialist embraces. So anybody who reads my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, hopefully will get a much different approach to what's going on, because what is happening is intentionally designed to confuse the people. Anything else you want to say, Mike?
Well, to sum up, I think you're saying that capitalism recognizes the profitability in a socialist system. So therefore, capitalists love socialists.
Right. and they hate freedom. They want monopoly capitalism rather than individual freedom, and that's what we want. We want a free enterprise system, not a capitalist system.
And that's made up like in the Soviet Union. The individual farmers, they would call them kulaks, and they finally went down there to Ukraine, which was the breadbasket of the Soviet Union, and 7 million in one winter were starved out after they came in and confiscated, killed cattle and confiscated land. In the New York Times, Walter Duranty, reporter for the New York Times, got a Pulitzer Prize for covering that up and talking about how he'd seen the future and how it worked. I mean, he basically extolled the virtues of the Soviet system. And there were others, a famous British journalist who was there and saw it. He wrote a book called Winter in Moscow, and I can't remember his name, but I think he eventually became a Christian. But he realized that Duranty was wrong, and he'd seen a very evil system that was eliminating that independent class of people who lived on their own land, who earned their own money, and who would be an independent force, a middle class, if you will. And that's certainly true of the small businessman. And look at how predatory capitalism, you look at what Walmart's done in cities where it's come into. It's put out a lot of small mom-and-pop stores, restaurants, hardware stores, and all that kind of thing, and that certainly had a devastating impact on America.
But, of course, what people don't understand is the capitalist uses government to destroy the competition. Now, if you didn't have, of course, government destroying the competition, then you would not have this great accumulation of wealth. That is, of course, what it's all about, is that these people use government, they want more government power to destroy their opposition. Hey, thanks so much for calling,
well,
Mike.
One last thing, I think, buried in what you're saying, is that capitalism is the enemy of free enterprise.
You're absolutely right.
Few people make the distinction between the two.
And we've got to get people to understand, but... they're never going to learn this in school, that's for sure. Let's go to Ken from Seal Beach. Hi, Ken. How you doing?
Pretty good. I've got a question for Colonel Ray. I'm a Vietnam veteran. What I'm concerned with is prayer at Annapolis. What is the current situation? Can a minister get up at Annapolis and say anything about God at all?
It's a good question. Let me make a distinction for you first. There's a lot of that on the website, firstprinciplespress.org. The legal attack came against the Virginia Military Institute in 2001. And that case and the history of prayer in the military is laid out on that website, firstprinciplespress.org. There's two kinds of prayer that you need to be aware of. Number one is leader-led prayer. That's the one in which the leader leads in prayer before he leads in battle, kind of the Joshua formulation. George Washington, you think of examples, Stonewall Jackson, you think of George Patton's famous prayer during the Battle of the Bulge. The leader leads the whole unit in prayer. And they obviously prayed according to their own dictates of their conscience, according to their own denomination. But the chaplain was a different situation. The chaplains have always come in and practiced the faith that they had from the denomination that sent them as a missionary to the military. So if you were a Methodist, you would pray like a Methodist. You would conduct a Methodist service for those that wanted to come. But if you prayed, you would pray like that. In fact, Abraham Lincoln passed a law in 1862 confirming that the military and the government were not going to tell a chaplain how to pray. Now, that's not been true.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Colonel, go right ahead and finish up that thought.
Well, I was going to say that the Naval Academy, in terms of offering prayer at the Naval Academy, when the ACLU, the American Jewish Committee, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, and Americans United for Separation of Church and State, those were the four groups that came after VMI, and several of those groups wrote threatening letters to the Citadel. They wrote threatening letters to the Naval Academy, the Air Force Academy, and to West Point. West Point restricted prayer. Naval Academy continued to pray. VMI fought them in court. The Citadel restricted prayer, and the Air Force Academy has restricted prayer. In fact, some of those from groups that were attacking prayer in court were hired by the government to advise the Air Force Academy on how to conduct their religious practices there. There was a big fight in the last year in the Congress, particularly about chaplain prayer. The House of Representatives wanted to let the prayer be given. Essentially, they were fighting over the name of Jesus Christ in prayers. They wanted the prayers to be given, and twice they passed laws, the Senate, the Pentagon, and apparently the White House, because 75 congressmen got together and wrote George W. Bush back in the late spring, asking him to issue an executive order to let these chaplains pray according to the dictates of conscience and the normal practice from the denominations they've come from, and particularly including the fact that many of them pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. George W. Bush and the White House did not respond to the letter from 75 congressmen.
Well, when a chaplain gets up, and let's say he's at a prayer breakfast, or let's say during breakfast for officers, can he use the name Jesus Christ, or can he say God? Can he say anything?
Well, they do. I mean, you go to a Rotary Club meeting, you go to a public service organization, you'll hear all kinds of people who'll make a prayer, and they'll say, in thy name we pray, and all that kind of thing. I tell you how I've recommended people to do that, and I've provided the history. We did a history of prayer all the way back to 1774. We found 67 prayer books in the Library of Congress distributed by the government of the United States and our armed forces in our wars and times of national crisis. You ought to see the prayers that are in those prayer books, funded by the government, distributed government money. And I've encouraged people to, if you want to pray in public and are asked to pray in public, just pull out a historic prayer and say, this is the prayer, even the strong prayer that Franklin Roosevelt was read over before the landing at Normandy. Mm-hmm. A prayer that was put in there for distribution by people you wouldn't expect. Eleanor Roosevelt said she always prayed the 23rd Psalm from the King James Bible. That was a prayer that she found greatly effective. But
Colonel, we're out of time, but go to First Principles Press, Ken, and all of our other listeners. First Principles Press up there on the Internet, and get the information. It's wonderful information. It's inspiring. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Colonel, I'm going to have to let you go. We're out of time. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I've sent you some background material that you might not have. I couldn't get through the facts, so you'll get a package in the mail in a few days.
God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Stan.
And we've got Ron from Prescott, Arizona, but we're going to have to let him go because we're out of time, and the hour flies by so quickly. And so, Cynthia, if you'd like to get the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, to understand who really runs the country, Foundations, Their Power and Influence is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. You really want to read Professor Quigley's book, which talks about the book on the foundations. Of course, it also goes into the background of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created back in 1891 that became known as the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States and the Royal Institute for International Affairs in Great Britain. And the book revealed so much that somebody came in and actually bought up the publisher, Macmillan, and destroyed the plates of the first half of the book. And if you find that difficult to believe, we have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells the story. Better than that, of course, we have the book now available, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, 1,342 pages, the most amazing book you'll ever read. It will give you real insight into what's going on, written from the point of view of somebody who hates people like you and me, who referred to us as the petty bourgeois, who voted for Barry Goldwater, and so he really told, he told the truth. He thought people ought to know who was in charge, but he was totally in favor of rule by an aristocracy, the elite. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have an opportunity to expose what's going on, and we hope that you'll want to help us. First of all, if you'd like any of the books we've talked about, Foundations, Their Power and Their Influence, the interview with Professor Quigley, or Tragedy and Hope, or you get them all together in the Tragedy and Hope special. That's Tragedy and Hope special. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do hope many of you may well be interested in getting a case of Dr. Dennis Cuddy's books. They're called The Secret Records Revealed, and it's a pre-publication offer. We can raise the funds while we'll go ahead and publish the book. You'll get a case of the book for $149.95 plus shipping. A great book. It's been, of course, added to. It has an index now. It has an epilogue to bring it right up to date. And it is something that everybody who values freedom should have. And here's a book, of course, that you can get into your friend's hands, use as a gift. You can sell them for three, four times what you're going to pay for them. Help us get the information out across America. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we do hope many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or perhaps take our newsletter. If you'd like to get a free newsletter, give us a call. We'd be glad to send you one. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And there on the Internet, why, you can listen to our programs directly or indirectly, 5 hours a day. 3 hours at Radio Liberty, 1 hour at AmericanNewsNet.com, 1 hour at GCNLive.com, 1 hour at RBNLive.com, 1 hour at SoundWave2000.com, 9 hours a day on the satellite if you really are a glutton for punishment. But we put this information out in the hope that people will recognize what's happening. America is under attack today, not from the Islamic terrorists, but from the people within, who have a different agenda, who have funded this whole Islamic terrorist movement from its beginning. If you doubt that, you need to get the book. It is a book by Robert Dreyfus called The Devil's Game. We carry that book. You need to get my pamphlets entitled Foreknowledge 911. It's a three-set pamphlets. You need to get the book entitled Terrorist Timeline, and then you need to get the DVDs we carry, Alex Jones, Terrorist Storm, that's the Terrorist Storm, the story of the Jersey Girls, it's called 911 Press for the Truth, 911 Press for the Truth, the book put out, DVD by the Power Hour, in plain sight, and then, of course, Dave Wagner's 9/11, the day that changed America forever. And, of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
On the Information Radio Network, I'm Laura Lee Shull. Auto industry executives say they shared concerns about trade issues and health care in a meeting with President Bush today. Bush said he knows automakers have to make tough choices in today's economy, but industry heads say they don't want a federal bailout. President Bush says he and the auto industry leaders talked about their mutual desire to find ways to reduce U.S. dependence on foreign oil.
As these automobile manufacturers begin to incorporate new technologies that will enable us to power our cars in different ways, it'll make it easier for me to be able to tell the American people we're using less foreign oil.
Chrysler Chairman and CEO Tom Lasorda say this meeting was just the first of what he expects will be many.
More meetings will be scheduled with the administration and other levels of government between the three of us, and I think that's a door that we've been waiting to open. And